Hi, I'm Amanda.
And I'm Rebecca, and this is Full Plate, Full Cup. We're startup leaders turned executive coaches who believe that you deserve to be wildly successful and wildly happy.
We interview trailblazing entrepreneurs, business leaders, and creatives so you can peek behind the curtain of how they got where they are today and start carving your own path towards success.
Each episode shares personal stories as well as actionable takeaways that you can apply to begin living a more joyful and fulfilling life.
Join us to learn how to scale your business, harness your power, and fill your cup.
If you like what you hear, subscribe, leave a review, and share with a friend. Thanks for listening.
All right. Hello and welcome back to the Full Plate, Full Cup podcast. We are so excited today to have someone who I've gotten to know really well over the past year as a mentor and a coach, James McCray. You might know him as at Words or Vibration on Instagram. James, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, Amanda. Hey, Rebecca. Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to chat with y'all today.
Yay. Well, I've been poring over your new book, The Art of You, this week. So I'm super excited to dive in. But before, let me just read your bio for those of you who are not familiar. So James McCray is an artist, poet, and teacher who empowers creators to live with purpose and turn imagination into reality. He is the founder of Sunflower Club, a podcast and global community dedicated to creativity as a tool for personal healing and social transformation. As a creative strategist, he has worked with top brands and startups to define and actualize their message and mission. As an artist, James uses internet memes to communicate deep concepts in a simple, humorous way, which he shares on his popular Instagram page at Words Are Vibrations. His books include Shit Your Ego Says and How to Laugh in Ironic Amusement During Your Existential Crisis. I need to get that one. His debut album of spoken word poetry, Our Last Night in Los Angeles, is available now. James lives in Austin, Texas. And as I mentioned, he has a brand new book called The Art of You, The Essential Guidebook for Reclaiming Your Creativity, which just came out. If you're hearing this, it came out like just a couple weeks ago. So James, what's going on? So excited to have you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for reading that.
Yeah. So, you know, we usually start out by kind of going back in time, going a little bit into like little James, right? So, you know, obviously in your book, you talk a little bit about creativity and how you were sort of a born creative and how creativity's always been a part of your identity. But for people who haven't read the book yet and don't know your story, talk to us about little James and how James knew he wanted to be a meme poet or how that all happened.
Yeah, great question. I mean, I definitely was a creative kid. I feel like all kids are creative. I feel like creativity is our nature. And I just never let go of those creative desires and interests. You know, one thing about my childhood is I grew up in a very small town in Southwest Minnesota. And that was a blessing in so many ways because there was a lot of freedom to explore, to let my imagination wander. It's a little bit isolated from a lot of the, whether it's like you grew up in a big city and there's, you know, there's dangerous things and there's crime, or in so many cases these days, like a child is already preparing to get into the right elementary school from a young age. So they're already on this trajectory of competitive academics. And this kind of thing, it does tend to thwart our creative nature because our creativity it's not always rewarded when it comes to, you know, academia or what we measure our success against as people. So growing up in a small town in Minnesota gave me a lot of freedom to just to be creative, to be an artist. And for that looked like writing, that looked like drawing, that looked like just exploring. You know, I just, you know, wandering around the neighborhood with my friends, just inventing whole imaginary scenarios and acting them out. Some of my earliest memories are being creative. And then when I found poetry in my early teens, that's when I really locked into like my creative calling. I think I wrote 1,000 poems before I turned 20, you know, roughly. I just had notebooks stacked up, and that was just one of my favorite hobbies. And looking back now, it's such a blessing, because I think to be good at any thing at all, creative or otherwise, it takes a lot of repetition. It takes a lot of practice. So the fact that I wrote 1,000 poems that no one will ever read and got those out of the way before I was 20, it just gave me a lot of practice and a lot of, you know, I'd already tried out all these different styles and directions. And there's a great quote by the jazz musician Miles Davis. He said, "Sometimes it takes a long time to sound like yourself." So for me, just having all of those poems at a young age and getting them out of the way, it just enabled me to, you know, find a voice that was authentically my own. And now I'm just lucky to be able to call myself a creative professional and a, you know, an author and an artist, which is definitely aligned with where I was as a kid.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk obviously a lot specifically about some of the tips and things you give in the book, because it's such a, I was saying to Rebecca, like Rebecca loves a book that like tell, you know, that has a real point and has a real purpose. And this book is, I feel like you made it as intentionally like action packed. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but it feels like it takes you on a journey with it. And you couldn't walk away from this book without taking some kind of action. There's literally like, even if you were the most like stuck, lazy, avoidant, busy person, right? There is, there's so many great tips and takeaways that even if you did one or two, right, it could be quite impactful. So before we kind of get back to a little bit of your journey, I want to ask about, you know, because you mentioned you were always creative as a kid, the creativity had some form of continuity in your life. I know a lot of people who maybe were creative at one point and then completely put it on the shelf, right? Completely gave it up for years, decades maybe.
Yeah.
What would you say to someone listening who's like, God, I used to do watercolors, but that was when I'm 18 and I'm 36 now and I haven't, you know, what would you say to that person to kind of, I don't want to say break them out of the rut, but just to help them get over that hump of, well, it's just been so long, I might as well not even try at this point.
Sure. And this is so common. This happens to everyone. This happened to me. You know, even though I was blessed to have a creative profession, it was still a corporate profession, you know, where I worked in advertising for a number of years. And for me, I was being creative for my clients, but I wasn't being creative for myself. And there's a difference there, you know. So I really had to rediscover that in myself as well. And you know, the book is really based on all the different stages of the creative process. And different people can get stuck in different places, right? So like the main premise of the book is the yin and the yang of creativity. And I think there are stages of the creative process that are yin oriented and stages of the creative process, which are yang oriented. And what this essentially means is, you know, yin and yang, I'm a student of Taoism, which is kind of where the idea of the yin and the yang comes from. And essentially, yin represents being receptive and having intuition, using your imagination, you know, setting an intention, being in touch with your emotions, and just living in such a way where you are filling yourself with inspiration. So for me, this is the first half of the creative process, is all yin activities. And in yin, nothing is really being done. It's almost like if you're a farmer or you're a gardener, yin is about, you know, cultivating the soil and maybe even planting the seeds. So before even anything grows, you're just cultivating that soil and you're planting the seeds. But then the yang is about action. It's about doing. It's about harvesting the crops that you planted and then preparing them for a meal and cooking them and serving them. This is about making art. This is about developing your own style. This is about having rituals that help you show up consistently. It's about experimentation and trying new things and even going so far as making money with your creativity. and making a social impact with your creativity. These are all yang. So different people get hung up in different places. And the book is really designed to, no matter where you are on your creative journey, you can find, you, some people get more stuck with the yin stuff. Like they're super productive, like me in advertising, like you're super productive and you're getting things done. But because you're not in touch with that intuition, your work is going to be lacking in purpose and deeper meaning, right? But if you're too much in the yin, you're all in flow. You are, you know, you're inspired. You've got your channel of intuition is open, but you're just in that flow zone and you might fail to finish your projects or to launch them because you don't have that yang to balance out the yin. But in most cases, you know, the first chapter of the book is called The Art of Doing Nothing. And this is really where I would direct most people to start when it comes to tapping back into their creativity, because it's really hard to go from, you know, like a corporate person where you're following the rules and you're both like taking orders and giving orders, right? As most jobs require both. And it's all about productivity and results. And there's a competitive nature to it. So I think the first step is to really extract ourselves from that system. That doesn't mean quitting your job. That doesn't mean doing anything drastic, but it means just taking more time to cultivate your own consciousness. So don't worry about jumping in and starting to be creative, starting to write poetry, make art. If you want to get there, I would recommend just really giving yourself space to wonder and to wander and to be in nature and to, you know, read things that are inspiring or visit an art museum and just develop a meditation practice, just to be in that quiet yin space. Because for anyone to be creative, it requires listening to your intuition. So if the mind is too busy with activity and there's too much mental chatter, it's really hard to hear that intuition. So really the first step is about slowing down that busy mind. And instead of doing, start listening and see what is trying to come through you. So being in stillness, being in nature, consuming art, and just filling your own cup with inspiration. And then when it's ready to come out, it'll come out.
So I resonate so deeply with what you're saying. Fun fact that many people don't know about me is I was a visual arts minor in college, specializing in ceramics. Like in middle school, my ceramics were going to national competitions. And like you, James, I spent 10 years in the advertising and marketing space. And you said something in your book that I was like, oh, hell yeah, which is when I was there, my creativity died. And I felt the exact same way. So 2 years ago, right before Amanda and I launched Full Plate, Full Cup, I quit my job, no plan. And I spent 6 months basically exclusively doing ceramics with a bunch of women, much older than me, decades older than me in the West Village. And it reignited this sense of creativity within myself. And so what you were just saying about, you know, stepping away and making space for yourself, it's speaking from personal experience, it is an absolute game changer. But, you know, people need to pay bills. They need to work jobs. You know, they have kids to raise and other life obligations. So for people who kind of are in the throes of everyday, dare I say, busy life, how do you suggest that they make that space for themselves in a way that can both be consistent and impactful?
Sure. Yeah, you really have to take it where you can find it in a lot of cases. And, you know, I wrote my first book while working full-time in advertising. So for me, like, if writing the book was a chore, that really wouldn't have been possible. You know, I think it's important. Creativity should be fun, and yes, creativity should fill your cup. I mean, of course, there is creative burnout. Like if you're working on finishing a project, and there are elements of burnout when it comes to creativity. But for the most part, it should be something you love doing. And that's why there's so many different forms of creativity and there's so many different, you know, shapes that can take. And I really recommend for anyone who wants to reconnect with their creativity is to find a modality, find an outlet, find a style that feels good, that they enjoy doing it. You know, I don't even like getting up early, like to go to work, but I would get up even earlier so I had time to write in the morning. And the only reason I was able to do that because I was enjoying it. You know, I love to write. I love to see what's coming out that morning, see what's coming through me. I like words and playing with words. So for me, that's playtime. It's fun. So find a way to make it fun and to do something that you enjoy. You know, even like with ceramics, even like doing things in a group setting, in a classroom, like this could be a good way to make it more fun as well, where it's not, because art does have a tendency at times to be an isolating, lonely endeavor. And for some people, that's great. People are more introverted, like I am. You know, it's great to have that solo time alone to work on your projects. But for others, they might want to go to a class or do something with their friends or do something that's going to be more community oriented. That's going to make it more enjoyable. And then just, you know, finding little chunks of time. Like I remember, you know, leaving my office in New York City and before going home, just giving myself like 20 minutes, a half an hour to wander through Central Park and just, you know, like no headphones in, just being there, just taking it in. You know, you can meditate for 10 minutes every morning and that's going to make a big difference. I used to even do little meditations in the bathroom while at work, you know, just to sneak away and like do a little breath of fire, like some rapid breathing, just to kind of give yourself a little bit of a recharge. So even if you are finding 5 minutes out of your day to meditate or finding an hour in the evening or even a half an hour to work on your practice, if it's bringing you joy, it's going to help restore your energy. And really little habits, it doesn't have to be a lot of time dedicated to something. Little habits can go a long way when you do them with consistency.
I love that you said that because it's so important. And I think we often underestimate what a difference 5, 10, 15 minutes can make. We've talked about that a lot on this podcast in terms of movement or journaling or meditation, but not in terms of creativity, right? Like when you think of creativity, you know, I often think of like, well, you need 10 minutes to set up your supplies and 15 minutes to clean them up. And then so you need to find time to actually do the creative thing, right? But it doesn't need to be this huge endeavor to be creative. I love you gave an example of going on a walk without headphones can be creative. Doing breath of fire on the toilet can be creative. Right? Like whatever gets you going, like find time to make it happen. So you have worked professionally in a creative field, as have I, as has Amanda in some sense. And I know that, you know, a lot of people listening to this do work for companies where, as you mentioned, James, you're giving orders and taking orders at the same time. And in those companies, there are creatives with a capital C, and then there's everyone else, right? And I've certainly run into the scenario before where I've been told, you're not the creative, like pipe down, right? So for those people, yeah, which is the majority of people who are not the creatives with a capital C, but have that innate sense of creativity inside of them and want to be creative in their jobs, creative at work, how do you suggest they exercise their own creative freedom within their job, even if it's not in their title?
Sure. Yeah, a couple answers. The first is that, you know, I think everyone has, certainly everyone has taste, or everyone has a different, you know, preferences. You know, when I was working in advertising, we were doing, you know, making logos and making websites, making marketing campaigns. And not everyone on the team was a so-called creative, but sometimes the best feedback we would get would be from the so-called non-creatives, whether it's the salespeople or the account people. You know, sometimes it's because you're seeing it from a new perspective, you know, because you're making things for the public. And it's good to have that, we would call it like the end user perspective, right? So it's like, oh, you know, art, God bless creatives and God bless designers and copywriters and all of this stuff. But sometimes they can be in their own head and you know, they, especially the younger ones, right? It's hard to see the impact it's having on the public, because, you know, you want to think like, oh, I made this and I'm so proud of it that I want it to be really great. but sometimes it might need some tweaks. So it's really helpful to have that outside perspective. So even if you're not creative per se, you still have a valuable opinion on creativity. And also, you know, I think that creativity, it's not, and the book says this, where it's really not about making art. Like, creativity is not just about making art. We tend to look at creativity like, oh, there's a few modalities of, like, people do oil paintings or watercolor or ceramics, or they write poetry. These are like traditional forms of art and creativity, which are all great. But I think that creative thinking can be applied to everything. You know, I remember when I was making a transition from being a graphic designer to being a brand strategist, right? Because I went to college for graphic design and I spent a few years being a graphic designer. And after a while, like, I really lost my passion for it. It just became me, like, taking orders from the clients and from whoever and just, you know, trying to make something look fairly pretty. And there really wasn't as much creative thinking involved as I had hoped. Then I saw this role of, like, a brand strategist, whether it's a little more upstream in the creative process where you're kind of creating ideas and concepts that really have a bigger impact than just the design. And I'm like, I had no experience doing that. But I'm like, how can I, you know, I know how to be creative as a designer, but how can I treat my career as an art form?
Oh, I love that.
How can I look around the office and navigate my way to a new position and show up in a new way? And there's a certain personal reinvention that I had to go through to reach that point. So I think creativity can be applied in many ways. You know, I think one small example would be, I remember being in meetings, and in meetings, I feel like everyone's trying to be super smart, right? Everyone's trying to say the smart thing and make the best point. And I felt like everyone's trying, they're just trying to make a point for the sake of making a point because they feel like they have to. And no one's willing to say, like, I don't know. But, like, honestly, I learned that, like, the best answer is sometimes I don't know, or I don't have enough information to make a decision. So I remember just being in meetings and just being willing to ask questions, right? Instead of trying to force an answer, being in that place of uncertainty and asking questions to arrive at a better destination. And I feel like that's creative, because when you start a creative project, you're kind of going into the unknown. You're kind of figuring it out as you go. So I learned, like, you can show up to a meeting and with that same mindset of not trying to force an answer for the sake of sounding smart, but to ask questions and to be curious and to be open-minded and gently guide us towards a better solution. So creativity is not about just making art. You know, even to start a business, to be an entrepreneur, what's more creative than being an entrepreneur? You know, you need to really, every day is you're trying to create something new, and you need to navigate the unknown and uncertainty and figure it out as you go. So business can be just as creative as any other art form.
Yeah, for sure. The whole time you were speaking, I was thinking about my clients who are mostly founders and CEOs of small businesses. And it's like, God, the amount of creative thinking and solution, you know, generating that you have to do. And I want to talk about, in your book, there's a part about cultivating healthy mental soil for creativity, which I love so much because it overlaps with things that are generative in so many other facets of your life. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to read this book and I'm going to follow these tips and Jesus, I'm going to be busy from, you know, 5 a.m. till midnight. No, it's like a lot of the things that cultivate healthy mental soil for the creative process are also, you know, beneficial and generative in other ways. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by healthy mental soil to drop those little seeds in?
Absolutely. Well, I think that the one of the biggest assets you can have in art and in life is having an open channel of intuition, period. Like, I think that there's a bit of a conflict between the voice of the ego and the voice of the intuition. And the ego is like the conscious mind, and it tends to be defensive, and it tends to be trying to protect you. and it limits your access to information. So I kind of compare it to in a computer, like your ego is kind of like the computer's hard drive. It stores information. You know, you can move that information around and think about certain things, but your intuition is like accessing the cloud, where you can tap into ideas or insights that are beyond the scope of the hard drive. So I think it's so important in, you know, some of my best ideas in life and in art have just kind of come to me spontaneously. And like you watch like a musician, especially like an art form like jazz music, and you watch like, you know, jazz music is so much based on improvisation. There's a band up there and they have a certain sound that they're going for, but they allow themselves a lot of freedom to just explore in the moment. And that's where this magic happens. So they're not using their conscious mind and their ego to play. They're tuning into their intuition and letting it flow without interfering, right? So it's so important to be able to do that. So how do you cultivate your intuition? How do you keep that channel open? You know, it's for me, it's about, like you said, cultivating that healthy mental soil. So having practices that will keep that portal of intuition open, so you're in a state of receptivity and listening and receiving. So for me, that looks like things like meditation. You know, like my morning meditation is a non-negotiable part of my day. It could mean, like I was saying before, consuming art. What we put in will eventually, in some way, come back out, right? So if we're just consuming the news media, bad TV, or
garbage TikToks.
Yeah.
Or garbage just, in, or garbage out.
Mindless TikTok videos. You know, that is affecting our consciousness. So it's about really being deliberate about what we let in. So consuming influences that we want to benefit us, whether that's reading books or, you know, curating your social media feed.
Yeah.
To be more inspiring.
Yeah.
Visiting art museums, things like this. It also has to do with the people that you surround yourself with. You know, we our friends and our family, they impact us, you know. So are your friends taking you down, or are they lifting you up? And really, you know, just curating your life in a way where you're absorbing good influences. It's like, it's same if it's a garden, you want to keep out the pests, you want to water the crops, you want to make sure they get sunlight, and you want to keep away pollution and pests and things that are going to be harmful for the crops. So it's very similar in the mind, and this is such an important part of the creative process.
Yeah. Something else that I think, you know, for the people listening who are like, okay, I'm a creative. Okay, maybe I'm not a poet. Maybe I'm not a, you know, jazz musician, but I'm launching an Instagram feed, or I'm launching a business, or I'm launching a blog or whatever. Something you talk about in the book is launch before you're ready. Yeah. And I think that is probably, you know, when I think of the hurdles, right, you talked about people getting stuck in different parts of the journey. For sure, the like moment of like putting yourself out there is a place where a lot of people are like, right, either, you know, they're too perfectionist or whatever. So talk to us about why you included launch before you're ready in the book, and why that's important to the creative process overall.
Well, it's important because I think you can certainly just do something creative in your own personal time and then never share it with anyone. And there's value to that. You know, you can just paint or write and no one ever sees it. There's still value to that, but I think there's even more value when you share it. Especially, you know, in today's social media age, like sharing our thoughts and our creativity is more accessible than ever and more normal than ever. You know, more people than ever have a public platform, so to speak. So whether you're doing creativity for your own personal healing and your own personal transformation, or you're trying to build a brand or even just a voice as a thought leader of some sort, you know, it's so important to put your work out there for it to be seen. You know, there's so many thoughts that can get in the way of this. The inner critic can be so challenging. How is it going to be received? Like, are people going to like it? How many likes is it going to get on Instagram? Like, there are so many factors that keep us from launching. But I think that we can only get better by doing it. We can only get better by doing it. And I was talking to a stand-up comedian recently, and they said that the only way a stand-up comedian can get better is by having more and more time on stage. Like, you can be at home in your room writing jokes all day, every day, and it does not matter how good the joke is on a piece of paper in your notebook. That does not matter. What matters is your stage presence and your ability to deliver the joke. And you only learn to do that by doing it and by practicing and working out the, you know, just the kinks that, you know, the verbal delivery, et cetera. So just getting that stage time, getting those reps in is so important. And it's important to launch before you're ready, because that's the only way you can get better and improve. Like, when I was in advertising, we used to make apps and websites, and we would do what's called the MVP, which is the minimum viable product. So the idea here is that it would be really easy for a company that wants to launch a new app to take years and years to launch, because they want to get every single feature just right. And you're never done. Like, an app is never done, because there's always improvements to make. But at a certain point, you have to launch it, because in launching it, you can get feedback and you can make it better. So it's better to launch a MVP, which would be essentially an unfinished product, just to get it to market and get some momentum going, and you can iterate from there, rather than waiting to launch and waiting, and then before you know it, your window of opportunity is closed because you waited too long and someone else did it. So it's just better to launch and iterate on the way. Like, there are things that I post on Instagram that don't do as well as others, or I might say something in a way that people didn't understand and they misinterpreted it. And this is all data and feedback that I intake and that will help me make better art in the future. So listening to that inner child that wants to do it out of the playfulness and out of the fun and out of the curiosity, rather than the inner critic, which wants everything to be perfect, because there's no such thing as perfection. It's about being in the moment, learning and growing. The trial and error of launching and seeing how it goes is so critical.
So how can someone work with their inner critic as they put something out into the world, especially if they're doing so before they're ready? Because I imagine the inner critic can get even louder in those moments.
Well, I think that, first of all, take the pressure off. I mean, what are we doing here? Like, why are we putting self-imposed pressure on ourselves as people or as creatives? So I think it's so important for it to be playful. You know, depending on what it is, you don't have to put it out until you've, you know, like I said, I wrote thousands of poems before I put them out. You know, who knows what feedback I would have gotten on those. But because I was doing it for the love of doing it and, you know, developing my skill in private, when I did launch, then I had a much better, I guess, reception. So for me personally, just being brave and just trying it and seeing how it works, you know, and treating it like fun and not putting so much pressure on ourselves to get everything right.
So, James, I would love to hear about your creative process. I know that you know, back when you were working in advertising, you used to wake up early to write. But in addition to that, what does your creative process look like? And additionally, how do you stay consistent in that process? Because you put out a lot, my friend.
I do. So my creative process, I've kind of boiled it down to a process that I call creative alchemy. And this is essentially bringing together the yin and the yang into one ritual, essentially. So the simplest way to say what I do for my creative process, which I apply for creating social media content, making memes, writing books, whatever it is, I like to create in the morning, because I feel like in the morning is, speaking of that channel of intuition, I feel like for me, that's strongest in the morning. Because once I'm having podcasts, once I'm in meetings, it can be hard to go back to that place of that open channel. So for me, those morning hours are super important. And I start by I make a big pot of yerba mate tea just to get started. I'll have coffee.
I love these details. Keep the details coming.
I'll have coffee later on, but I start with a big pot of yerba mate tea and I play some instrumental music. And I
do
and
you
I,
play it or do you like hit play on Spotify?
No, I listen to it.
Okay. Just checking.
But I meditate and I might even prepare my environment. Like I might burn some Palo Santo and I try to keep my studio where I write in, you know, clean and organized and make it, I try to say like, make it an environment where the muse is going to be attracted to. So that includes like the cleanliness of your space. Or I even like on my walls, I have artifacts from some of my favorite artists or like first edition books of some of my favorite writers. It's similar to, I kind of treat my studio like an altar, but instead of like religious artifacts, I have like creative artifacts. So that's all meant to like just summon the spirit of the muse, right? And then I say that my creative process starts in my body, not in my mind. And I think this is really important. So I have like an open notebook and it's sitting there, but I really try to not force it. I see what's trying to come through me, right? So I start with, this is the yin. I start with the yin. I listen and I don't listen even with my thoughts. I feel with my body. So I think that ideas sort of start in the body. There's an energy and our emotions have access to subtle information that's beyond the reach of our conscious mind. So I start by feeling and I just feel like what's trying to come through me, what needs to be said. And I sort of just wait until something comes through. And then I just, so it's sort of subconscious. You have to listen very carefully because the intuition speaks softly. So if you're thinking too much, I say that a mind that's too full of information has no room for inspiration. So I try to not think, but feel my way until an insight comes through and then I write it down. So I call it like a purge. It's almost like I'm purging my energy or I'm purging my subconscious mind onto the paper. So that's kind of like the moment of creation where it goes from the yin receptivity to the yang action. So then once I have an idea, it depends on what it is, but I'll try to write it down right as it comes through. And then that's the kind of the rough content of the idea. And then there's the, it goes into a process of making and doing and yang, which is, it might be editing it. It might be bringing it into design software. And it's like, oh, is this going to be a meme or is this going to be a poem or what's the best shape and form for this idea? And now, by the way, now this could happen later in the day. For me, the doing part does not require the same level of inspiration, right? So I separate the yin and the yang. The yin is about being inspired and receiving the idea and just kind of getting that initial draft in my notes app. But then I might go to a coffee shop later in the day and have coffee and like be around people and then like bring it into Photoshop and start like making it in that sense. So there's like different phases for me. And then when it comes to social media, I usually have like a bunch of stuff on my desktop that I've made. And then I'll just choose like when to post it. Like maybe I'll post it that day, but maybe it'll take a couple weeks before it comes out. So I usually create enough. So I've got a backlog of content and I don't have a schedule that I follow. I just kind of feel what's right in any given day and then choose when to publish it.
What I think is so helpful about that is that there is both structure and flow, which, you know, kind of speaks to what you've said. But for, you know, for people who can apply that to their own life, like I even think about people who do sales or marketing, right? I was in sales for a long time and you're essentially dealing with people and you're communicating. And so knowing how to communicate people is an art form, right? Like managing a team is an art form. So I think it's, you know, helpful for people to kind of think about how could they apply both the concept of the structure and then also the flow to whatever it is that is going to, you know, come through them. But in the book, kind of towards the end, you have both a pledge, which is almost like a promise to yourself about like your, you know, creative process. And then there's also affirmations. And so I kind of think I know why you wanted to put both a pledge and a list of affirmations in the book, but I'd love to hear from you why you felt like, okay, I want to close this baby with like these kind of cementing tools.
Yeah, the pledge, I mean, I think that it was like, you know, you read the book and you learn about, you know, how to be an artist and all the different steps that go into it. And then at the end, it's about like, yeah, making that personal commitment to yourself to be an artist and to claim that. I think it's so hard for people in this day and age to see themselves as an artist. Even if they're a painter, let's say, they're like, well, I'm not a professional. So like I paint, but I don't consider myself an artist. You'll hear a lot of people say things like this. It's really about giving that permission. We're like, no, you are an artist. And this is a simple pledge that you can say to yourself to claim that, because it took me a long time to really claim that, you know, it's like, oh, I work in advertising, but like, I want to write books, or I'm working on a book, but I'm not like an artist, but it's like, no, actually you are. It's a mentality shift more than anything else. So the artist pledge is about just giving that mentality shift. This is all it takes. It's not about how much talent you have. It's about that commitment and how you see yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that so much. Well, I don't want to say we have to ask about this, but people are so curious about social media growth, social media success. Probably everyone listening follows you. You know, you have a large following, particularly in our kind of demographic. And so can you talk a little bit about the starting of the account, how you picked your name, the momentum, and when it sort of, took off? Everyone wants to kind of reverse engineer that process. So tell us your version of that.
It was all organically. I started my Instagram account when Instagram came out. Pretty sure it was like 2011 when I started my account. But, you know, like everyone else, at first, my Instagram was just pictures from my life. You can scroll back and my first picture is like me drinking with friends.
I love that for you.
And I didn't delete, you know, I could delete this, but I curate it. But I love about social media truly is that you are leaving behind an archive. Like our Instagram pages are going to outlive us. You know what I mean? So I like the fact that there's a lot of, you can go back and see all the different versions of myself and of my art and of my life. So at first it was just pictures from my life, nothing crazy. And it really wasn't until, you know, honestly, I got a book deal first because I got really lucky. I stumbled into a book deal with Hay House. I actually, you know, I won a contest and I won a book deal. So suddenly I have a book coming out. I never had that marketing platform that they speak of to really promote myself as an author because I got the book deal first. So I had to like figure out how to catch up with my platform. That was the first time I had to be like, oh, okay, I need to use social media for more than just taking occasional pictures of, you know, pretty scenes. And I'll never forget this because I was actually visiting with Hay House and I thought, you know, how can I market myself as an author? And at the time, the Hay House authors who were popular were people like Gabrielle Bernstein, right? So like these are people who are really good, polished public speakers. In her case, she's very much like a cheerleader and a lot of enthusiasm. And, you know, that just wasn't me. And I felt like I needed to fake it and like be more like her to have a following. And I remember what the people at Hay House told me was that do whatever makes you feel jazzed. It's the same with about the creativity. Like if it's not fun for you, it's not going to work. It's not going to be worth it. It's going to feel like a chore. It's going to come across as insincere. So I learned that very early that you need to find a voice, a tone, a style that is you. And if you look at Instagram or social media and look at all the different types of people who go viral or who have big platforms, there's a lot of variety, a lot of very different things. And people are doing things that are in some ways very contradictory. Like you've got some people like, let's say like the holistic psychologist, you know, in a world that tends to favor really short, snappy things, she's going deep into what I call these essays, where she has these multiple slides that are breaking down a concept. But then you've got other people, like let's say like Young Pueblo, who is always doing just like little short, you know, bursts of wisdom, right? So what he does works great for him. What Nicole does is great for her. They're very different. So for me, that started off by like, I was like, what do I like to do? And I was like, oh, you know, I like to draw. Like, I haven't drawn for a long time. So if you go back to my Instagram, when my first book came out, all of my posts were like drawings. And I was almost like making little cartoons, but they were just like stick figures and they were like talking to each other. So it was almost like sharing wisdom and mindfulness through these illustrations that were very simple. And I did that for a while, and there was a whole breakthrough that I had in 2020 when I learned the art form of the meme. And, you know, prior to that, most memes were very like, there was a lot of deep content with memes. It was kind of funny cat pictures, things like that. But I got really into this idea of how to apply my own philosophy, poetry, like spiritual perspectives in memes. And I had that background as a graphic designer, so I kind of knew how to put these things together. And when I made memes, especially during, this was like 2020, and if you remember the craziness of the world during 2020, I was really tapping into that collective existential crisis that we were all having. So it wasn't just that I was doing memes, it's that I was like, I tapped into a tone that was relatable for that time. And helping, like, I was helping myself navigate the uncertainty, but in doing so, I was helping others navigate the uncertainty. So memes is where my page really started to blow up. And I still make memes, but now like there's so many people that make memes, so I'm almost bored with it. So now I'm like keeping things more like just well-designed text on a background. And now I'm actually, with my new book on creativity, I'm actually getting back into doing hand-drawn things, which is a return to what I was doing. And also, I've had to learn how to put myself out there, because for the longest time, I was hiding behind drawings or then hiding behind memes. And I was like, well, if I'm really going to be a public figure, an author, someone who people pay for my classes or whatever, they need to know me. And I was not comfortable doing video. And I knew I just had to embrace it. I had to embrace it. So it was excruciating at first, finding my rhythm. Like, I was trying different things. Like, I was like, what reels can I do? And I'm like, well, my page is called Words of Vibrations. Maybe I'll do like book reviews. And I was doing like 1 minute book reviews. And I did like two of those. But I gradually got more and more comfortable doing video. And now it's something I enjoy doing. So a lot of trial and error. Just to find a voice that was authentically mine. And it's still evolving, but I definitely recommend that people just find a style that works for them, something that comes naturally to them, and then just show up and do it consistently and, you know, make changes as you go. I think it's okay to evolve and change, but whatever comes naturally to you in that moment is going to be the best way to go, because it's going to be authentic to you.
What I want to point out about what you just said is, not only giving yourself permission to evolve, but also celebrating the past iterations of you, right? There's no shame in your first photo out partying with your friends. There's pride in, you know, your first videos. There's pride in, you know, you used to do drawings and now you're back to drawings, right? The old versions of you are not imperfect in any way, right? They're just past evolutions of who you are today. And without them, you wouldn't be who you are today. So they all deserve to be celebrated. So I appreciate you speaking to those. James, we could go on and on. We have so many questions to ask you, but we'll end with our three rapid fire questions that we ask. Well, two rapid fire questions we ask every guest. So first, in one or two sentences, how do you define success?
Ooh. Well, I like to say that success is defined by inner fulfillment, not external validation.
Beautiful, concise, and highly quotable. And our second question is, where can our listeners find you and find your books?
Yeah. So my Instagram is Words Are Vibrations. And the link in my bio has all the links to my website, my online classes, and all the places where you can buy my new book as well.
Amazing. Well, James, we are going to be recommending this to everyone because it's not only so good, it's such a fun, like, gift. It really, I said to Rebecca, this is
Amanda just texted me today. Yeah.
I was like, it's a perfect gift to anyone that you want to be happier and like have more fun. And like, you know, it's like, if you give this book to somebody, it means you love them.
So,
you know, like you want to see them, you want to see more of them in the world, which is kind of like the highest thing that you can say to anybody. Hey, I like you. And I think there should be more of you out there. So read this book, right? That's
I'll take that. I love that compliment, Amanda. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And we look forward to sharing this episode with our community.
Thank you both so much. It was great to chat with you today.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Full Plate, Full Cup. If you found this episode helpful, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with a friend.
To learn more about the Full Plate, Full Cup methodology or to work with us in a more personal way, find us on Instagram at Full Plate, Full Cup. That's at FullPlateFullCup or online at www.fullplatefullcup.com. www.fullplatefullcup.com.